Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm happy to be joined this afternoon by Carolyn, who is a yoga teacher in the Sangha and beyond, and is with us this afternoon to speak about her experience of the benefits of a yoga practice and in her awareness practice. Welcome, Carolyn.
Hi, Jen.
Hey.
Hey.
So I have to tell you that the inspiration for me to have you with us came from truly, I really mean this, extraordinary yoga that we did at the New Year's retreat.
Mm.
And what I saw about it was that it's always an experience, you know, doing yoga on retreat, well, doing anything on retreat is fabulous. You know, we talk about the food is amazing and because we're present for it, right?
Yeah.
But I saw in a different way, I just, in one of the yoga sessions in the afternoon, it just dropped in, oh, we have to have Carolyn on the Good News, because there was something that, some way in which we were doing it and the mindfulness that was being brought to it and the care and attention that felt like it's such a benefit in our awareness practice. And so I thought it might be fun to have you on and to see if we might be able to articulate some of what that is.
Hmm. You know, I had that same experience. It actually deepened my practice as well. There was an epiphany of really getting it on a deeper level than I'd ever gotten it, that of non-separation and oneness, that 50 people breathing in unison and moving in unison and bringing what I projected was so much willingness and so much attention.
Yeah.
The energy that was created in that room, I thought we were just going to, the whole building was going to blast off.
Also lift off.
Yeah.
Yeah, truly.
Yeah, yeah. And the just, and being, you know, it's yoga in that space.
Uh-huh.
It was incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've carried that with me ever since the retreat.
Uh-huh.
And that's my intention, is to create that wherever I go. Uh-huh. You know, that by coming together in the way that we did, it is possible.
Yeah, and you know, I really resonate with what you're saying, and certainly everyone in the room, as we always say with Sangha, had a part in creating that, and
mm-hmm.
You were leading us. You had clearly, I don't know, either thought it through or channeled it from life. I don't know where it came from, but the things that you led us through. And so I wonder if there's a way you can articulate kind of what that is and how we might, just each of us, bring some of that movement awareness into our awareness practice.
Wow, these are such amazing questions. And I can only say that what is coming up when I lead a class like that, I mean, this is going to sound just silly, I know, but I'm not doing it. I'm not leading it. I'm, like you said, I'm channeling it.
Yeah.
But my experience, because of the supportive practice,
mm-hmm.
is that I don't have to do anything.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I wasn't doing anything.
Yeah.
And it was almost like I was being led along with everyone else.
Yeah, I thought that was the image that was dropping in for me.
Yeah, we were all practicing together, and I was used as a model, so to speak, to kind of demonstrate things.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe time things so we could all sort of move together and call out when we were inhaling or exhaling,
mm-hmm,
or
mm-hmm.
or maybe point out some alignment things. But the choreography or the movement, the whatever, I can't take credit for that.
Right. Certainly one of the things that we talk about is insight needs experience.
Yes.
So you're bringing a lot of experience with you to that process.
Yes.
And so, like, some of the things I project anyway are just in my limited, experience of doing yoga. I mean, I've never taught yoga, but just in many years of doing it myself, that for example, bringing attention to the core, to the you were always bringing us back to paying attention to, you know, our center, essentially. And I've noticed that that carries through for me as I'm going through my day, and what an assistance that is for caring for the body, for that core of strength, for being present, for noticing where I am.
Yeah.
That sort of
thing. Yeah. I think what yoga can be is an embodiment, a moving meditation in a sense, and how we want to align with our practice principles, we want to align ourselves with our deepest heart's desire. We can practice that in the body by aligning ourselves so that we have that same kind of physical support. So it's a mirror for practice. And by checking in with the body, we can see if we are indeed literally embodying our practice. Are we aligned? Are we connected? Are we supported? Yeah.
Do you have any simple ways? In a minute, I'm going to ask you about the bowing because that was my favorite part. But just when you said that, you know, checking in to see, are we aligned? Are we? Do you feel like there's anything verbally on the phone that you can explain in terms of a simple check-in for checking in with some of those things?
Well, what I've developed over the years, only because it's like practice. We know how good it feels to be aligned with practice and supported. I'm always checking in, no matter what I'm doing, to make sure that I'm in alignment. That I'm checking in of the right and left side of my body, the front and back. If I'm sitting, are my shoulders over my hips? Are my feet flat on the floor? Are my knees in line with my hip joints? It's always this little check-in, because what I've experienced over the years, if I do that constant little checking in, no matter what position I'm in, by the end of the day, I have had the experience of all of that love and attention.
Wow! Oh, I can really feel that. Yeah. Yeah.
There is the soft animal of my body who has been cared for and loved and cherished the entire day, and it responds. I mean, I think of almost like being, if you've ever looked into the eyes of an animal who you adore, your body is just like that. Your body waits for your every move. It's like it waits. What are we going to do next?
It
loves being with us. And if we're in our heads and we're, you know, in conversation with conditioning, our body is over in the corner longing for us.
That's a neat image. And so patient, and that when we turn our attention to it and really care for it, there it is.
Every single time.
Yeah.
Without fail.
Yeah.
The body doesn't judge us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Jen, the other thing that I had the experience of at that retreat was every one of us has the perfect body.
Yeah.
Every one of us has the body that's the perfect body, the perfect vehicle for awakening.
Yeah. Oh. Boy, that takes the pressure off, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
And really, if we think, opens the door to enjoying it, and which of course is the door to caring for it, because we love it, not because we should.
Yeah, it's our strongest, most fiercest, most faithful ally.
Yeah. So, do you feel like you can talk us through the bowing? Because I'll tell you what I have noticed: every single time I bow, which living at the monastery, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a great check-in. Often it's right before I'm about to bow, I remember, and sometimes right after. Oh, darn. I forgot.
Yeah.
But it's such a great, it's just such a great bring me right back here.
Yeah. So in yoga, oftentimes we say that each pose, in each pose is the entire experience, the entire embodiment of a yoga practice.
Oh, wow.
So in each bow, in each making gassho is the entire embodiment of our awareness practice. And if we're not separating, if we're not saying, well, you know, there's my mind and there's my body, but if we drop that separation and that experience of oneness, when we bow, we're bowing fully and not half-heartedly. We're bowing wholeheartedly because we're bowing in our bodies. Our head isn't making the bow, our body is making the bow. And I'm happy. I think we can do it.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, let's go for it. So if you're sitting, and if you're sitting in a chair, come to the edge of the chair so that your knees and your hips are about 90 degrees.
Okay.
And if you bring the little finger side of your hand right into that crease that's formed between your thigh and your pelvis, that's your hip crease.
Okay.
And your hip joint is actually in the middle of that crease. Most of us think our hip joint is out on the outside of our hip, you know, the outside boundary of, but it's actually deep inside. So if we bow from the hip joint and we actually bow the way our body was designed to move, we will bow in that joint, that where the ball of the femur meets the socket of the pelvis. We'll bow in that joint. And to do that, and I think we talked about this at the retreat, we make a gentle, like we're zipping up from the top of our pubic bone up to our rib cage, so we kind of zip up there gently and lift our bladder control muscles. So we're connected, and that provides the support so that when we hinge forward, you can just hinge forward now without changing the shape of your spine. You can just lean forward like a metronome coming forward, and you feel that all that support at center, and you're bowing, and if you bring your little finger side, you can actually feel your hand disappearing in that crease.
Yes.
So if we do that same thing and come to standing, and keep the backs of our knees soft and have our feet about fist width apart, so that we have a wide enough base to feel nice and stable. And we do the same thing. We keep the spine nice and long, and we just bow and feel the little finger side of our hand disappearing back. So we haven't changed the shape of our spine. We're lifting up the front of the body, so we make a little zipper lift and lift our pelvic floor, our bladder control muscles. So we that's the support, the alignments, and keeping the spine nice and straight. And then when we bow, we're so deeply connected and aligned and supported that we're embodying practice.
Wow. And so we basically fold in half. We don't curl down.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We don't flex our spine forward. We don't shorten. We don't drop our ribs down toward our hip bones in front or bend our upper back. Everything stays nice and long. We're bowing from the hip crease, keeping the spine straight.
So, Carolyn,
and practice doing it, you know, maybe at a little bit of an angle at first, just to get used to the move. And even practice in front of a mirror, or you know, turn to the side and practice to see that you're not changing the shape of your spine.
Yes.
And if your hamstrings are tight, bend your knees a little bit more.
Yeah.
We don't want to compromise the alignment of our spine.
So, I have so many more things I want to say about this and ask you, but it's a couple of minutes after the hour.
Oh, no. Really?
I know. Can you believe
it? Oh, my goodness. This was so much fun, Jen.
I am so glad we just got that on a recording, because it's the kind of thing that's life-changing, and I'm so happy to practice it. And then over time, you know, it morphs to something else. And so to be able to go back to this archive and get that instruction again, I'm so grateful.
I'm grateful too, Jen. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for being with us, Carolyn.
All righty. Take care.
Okay. Take good care.
Bye.
Good night. And Michael, as I turn it over to you and Sherry, a reminder about the invitation that Sherry gave to us last week. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. And then she put out the talk about money and all of that good stuff. I hope folks have a chance to read it. But so big invitation today for people to address that topic, should they choose to do so.
Excellent. From the blog.
From the blog.
I bet. about
everything
what is not spiritual. Yes.
Even
yes.
Rolls-Royce.
Excellent.
All right.
Even Rolls-Royces. Thank you, Jen.
Have a great show.
Okay. And thank you, Carolyn. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
My hamstrings are happy now.
Oh, I'll tell you. So during the retreat, I don't do the yoga because I'm doing guidance. I have a different activity, and so I've made peace with that over the years, but I got to tell you, it's a little one of those. Oh, I wish I could do that too. So when Carolyn gave that instruction, of course, you know, I'm on the edge of my chair here, and then I'm standing up and I'm doing the bow, that was fabulous. I'm with Jen, you know, and I'm hoping that from now on, everybody who teaches people to bow, you know, instead of, and then you bow, as if people know what
right.
that means. You know, you wouldn't say, and then you sit down to meditate. You know, that's a huge thing that we go through to make sure people really have a feel for it and understand it and why it's important and what's involved. And so my hope is that everybody who teaches people how to be in this practice will take that on and learn those instructions the way they learn the instructions for how to show someone how to meditate, and it really gets integrated into our practice going forward so that we don't lose it and go back to that, you know, bowed spine and tucked pelvis and, you know, all of those places that people get into that it feels like it's taking care of the body, but it's really just reinforcing all of the things that aren't working. So that was fabulous.
Yeah, it was fabulous. And I love, as you talked about, you know, the participation. That's what practice is about, is getting the instruction and then taking it in and working with it.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, that old awareness. And the thing that they didn't say that is my personal passion and the reason that yoga at a retreat is so important to me is what it's like to sit in meditation after doing yoga. Mm. It's just, I think it's just almost a guaranteed bliss. Everything that Carolyn said about the body, you know, it's just so, we're right there with it. It's feels cared for and nurtured and open and relaxed. And then we get to sit and to sit in that, in that space is just heavenly.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great.
That's great, yeah. I think I forgot to ask you, how are you?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great. I'm excited. I'm glad to be alive and glad to be participating in practice and feeling very blessed.
Boy, that's it, isn't it? Glad to be alive. Feeling
you know,
blessed.
I was just reflecting. Yes, yes. And I was just reflecting on today how this commitment for open air requires me to show up and drop everything else. And that's what I love about it. You know, all of our practice opportunities, you know, whether it's reflective listening buddies or retreat or stop, drop, and text, you know, we have to drop everything else and get here and do this because this is here now and this is what we're focused on.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's where all the benefit is, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so karmic conditioning, the voices would tell us that, you know, if you get this done or as soon as that's over, when this happens out there in the future sometime or other, then you'll get to feel the way you want to feel. But what we know is as soon as we drop all that and get here, we feel the way we want to feel. So it's a much quicker, easier, actually, journey. So, yeah.
Yes. Excellent.
So we can bow to that, huh?
Yes, indeed.
Uh-huh.
And I have a few announcements here.
All right, because things are heating up. It's a new year, right?
And oh, my goodness.
Yeah, when we came to the end of last year, remember you kind of ran out, and there was that one last thing to announce, and then that was it. And now, here we go again. What you got?
Big long list. Start the year with support. join us for our kickoff video conference this Sunday, January 18th. There is no fee for this workshop, but we do need you to register at livingcompassion.org/this-year-now. And there's no spaces or dashes in this year now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's coming right up.
Whew. Yeah.
And don't let the voices talk you out of a year of support. Registration is now open for our year-long retreat entitled Training to Live in This Here Now. Mm-hmm. Sign up at livingcompassion.org/schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And that same website has more information on that as well as all the other events. And again, that's livingcompassion.org/schedule.
Some fun stuff coming up.
Yes. And a couple of reminders to make a show to indicate your desire to talk with Sherry today. Press *6 and then 1. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
All right. Thanks,
so
Michael.
Let's get started. You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Jennifer from New York.
Well, hello, Jennifer. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm calling because my coach encouraged it.
No, Jennifer.
Huh?
You're calling because your coach reminded you and you wanted to do it.
That's true.
And you remembered. And so you did it.
That's true.
Yeah.
Good.
You get the credit. You get the credit. Your coach just was good about reminding you.
Yeah. Yeah. So thanks, coach. I wanted to connect because I kind of screwed up and didn't get registered for RLB or Stop Drop Text in time. So I thought, well, what else can I do? So it was an intention before she suggested it. And
Now again, I'll give you a little coaching here, okay? It's not that you screwed up.
Yeah.
I would say what happened was you got distracted. Okay, you were distracted by whatever karmic conditioning was doing and probably got talked into doing other things than signing up when signing up would have been a possibility. And then it gets framed as if it's your fault. Somehow you've done something wrong that it didn't happen. But really, you got bamboozled.
That's right.
Yeah, you got conned. And that happens. You know, we are programmed to fall for those cons. And that's what practice is recognizing them, seeing them, realizing what happens. What happens when this? What happens when that? We get clearer and clearer and clearer, and we start seeing them coming down the pike. And we can sidestep them and start making choices for ourselves. And that's just what awareness practice is and does.
Yeah, I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I thought I would set up a commitment to do RLB and stop drop text with myself and just keep the practice.
Oh, with yourself?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, I remember, I think the very first good news update that was about stop drop text, that person was saying that they started texting themselves, and I always remembered that. So I've done it before, too, when a session has ended and then the other one didn't start yet.
I mean, it's fun to have another person involved, but hey, you don't have to do without that support just because you missed a deadline. You know a good person to talk to.
Yeah, and I think it's a great idea because I'm needing to get more involved in my own life as the mentor. Yeah.
Do you have a pretty good recording and listening practice?
It's getting there.
Notice I said pretty good. I didn't say really strong.
Yes, so yes, I have a pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good, and it's getting better. It's getting better every day. Yeah, because that's with the reflective listening buddies, that is, again, you know, it's wonderful to have another human being to practice with. There's just no question about it. But that little recorder is just, you know, good friend and endless support and source of guidance and wisdom. And my favorite thing is somebody to talk to when, you know, I get to that place of about something, you know, instead of burdening another human with it, I just talk to that recorder and get it all out and then, you know, get to a place of clarity and the mentor says something wise and it feels like a pretty full relationship to me.
Yeah, I've had good experiences. It's just that I've also had some not good experiences with, I guess, like ego taking over.
Well, you know, that's why there's a delete erase function.
Yeah.
Mhm. We just get rid of those. Okay. So I listened to it and oh, that was ego. That's not helpful. Erase. And you know, I never thought about this before, Jennifer. But when I just said that, I thought, you know, that's a really that's a proof of who has the power. You know, it can't hit erase and erase you. But you can hit erase and get rid of it, which is basically what we're doing in our lives, right? We're just, you know, it starts going on about something, and it's not kind or helpful to us, and we just do the equivalent of delete, erase, shift the attention, put it where we want it, get to this here now, and all is well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's important to remember. All right. Well, I'm glad you checked in. Keep in touch.
All right.
Thanks and keep us posted so they don't talk you into, oh, well, you missed the sign up on those, so now you're all alone and we're your only companions. Sangha is a happier companion than those voices in the head, huh?
Yeah. Thanks for being there.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Take good care, Jennifer. Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jennifer. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Laura calling from Hawaii.
Well, hello. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good to hear your voice. What's going on?
Likewise. It's been a while since I've called in.
I know.
But I read the blog, and I spoke about it on my reflective listening call, and then I did the mini workshop as well, and was very surprised to see that I had these beliefs that I thought I had let go of around martyring and believing it's somehow noble to be poor.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to explore that a little bit, if that's okay with you.
Oh, yeah, please. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you see?
Well, what I saw was it seemed like as I was answering those questions, I saw that there were a whole bunch of parts of me who had opinions. And, I'm just not sure well, even as I'm saying this, I have a bit of an idea how to bring them all together. And there's the, you know, there's the opinions that I want to believe are true,
mm-hmm.
which I guess would be a belief. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's my hope for this coming year. So, you know, this thing that I've dragged people into, some people who responded to it and asked me about it and gotten involved. The thing that I like is when we come up against something that reveals our opinions and our beliefs and our assumptions. Because karmic conditioning is so skillful at manipulating a person into doing what cares for ego. And when people are doing what cares for ego, the message is that feels right. Now, I'm not saying there isn't suffering with it, because that is usually a big part of it, but it feels like the right thing to do, the right person thing to do. Okay? When we go up against ego, against karmic conditioning, that's when all the signals come up that there's something really wrong and this is dangerous and you shouldn't do this and that. So, I mean, you could do, and each one of us would know, actually, one of the good places to push the buttons. Just to pick something that does set those alarms off and then do it just simply to see what's behind there.
Mm-hmm. And right? I have a perfect example.
Oh, good.
That I think might be useful for me to do and that I've been putting off. I discussed a raise with my boss who agreed and then asked me what I wanted, and I haven't been able to come up with an answer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect. And here's my best encouragement, okay? Give yourself a timeline.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have that answer by X.
Okay.
Because then, as soon as you come up with an amount, you're going to hear it. You know, then a less amount, then a higher amount, then a this, then a that, then a, you know, and maybe I'll ask for a raise and, or instead of all money, I'll ask for, you know, and just start putting out there what you would really want. If there were nothing going on about anything, how would you want this to be?
Mm-hmm.
And see what that stirs up.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Perfect. I love it.
Me too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Sherry.
Is there more? Okay.
Well,
you'll let us know.
I will let you know. And it's like I'm almost revisiting it because, you know, the same process, because I did this earlier when I was offering a service and coming up with what do I charge for this. And so I went through this, and here I am again.
Yes, yes. Well, it's, again, I wish I could convey to people how big and how important this is. The level of resistance that people feel could be the biggest of all possible clues. But it's so frightening for most people to go up against that system that even though there's information that I'm not free about this isn't it, but it's okay enough. You know, it's better to just stay here doing what I'm told than risk what would happen to me if I went up against that system. Now, in awareness practice, I can't do anything, and nobody else can either. I'm not, to get people to face that. Because, so if I said, you know, for instance, I think you came to this retreat where we said, pick something that you're going to do every day for a month. You know, it can be pat your top of your head 3 times or, you know, wiggle your nose 3 times or, you know, whatever it is, bow 3 times. 3 is a good number, you know. mm-hmm. before you leave the house. Whatever it is, it's a little, a silly, a whatever. And then try to do that. And that system will come after you like you were threatening to break into the mint. As one person said it recently, like you're building atomic bombs in your basement. Okay? The level of resistance to something so simple. And so what happens is people just simply forget. They don't do it. They get talked out of it. They go on to something else. And that's the end of it. But if we could really get, as human beings, how important this is, we would take this stuff on a daily basis. We would go after it at every turn because it really is a matter of life and death. It's not some insignificant little thing. That, as you've noticed with this, those beliefs and assumptions are controlling the quality of your life. And you're all of us, okay? We mm-hmm. are not actually aware that we are attending to them. So when I say the quality of your life is determined by the focus of your attention, okay, people get that. But that we are attending to beliefs and assumptions that are controlling our lives, and we don't know we're attending to them.
Mm-hmm. Because I thought I dropped them. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And all that happened, as you can see, is you weren't challenging them. They go underground. They're able to do their work, no problem. Mm-hmm. Then you challenge them again, and whoosh, there they are, like freeze-dried coffee, just full force back, ready to say, no, you don't do that.
Yeah, I love it.
Mm-hmm. me too. I think it is so exciting, and I hope other people find it exciting. So we'll see.
Okay.
But let me know what happens, because you know I want to know. All right.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And good afternoon where you live, isn't it? You're having a lovely afternoon. All right. Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. You're listening to Open Air. And Sherry, we're going to hear from our coaches program now, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
The practice theme for this year is upping your game. We are all spiritual athletes in the game of life, and we can train to participate joyfully in the spirit of play. Yes, we are up against a worthy opponent, egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate. But we can up our chances of success by getting a personal trainer, a Zen awareness coach. The awareness coaches are guided by Sherry Huber to offer individual coaching around any number of life issues or awareness practice in general. Coaching places a special emphasis on recording and listening. We hear from folks new to practice and from old timers that awareness coaching provides the extra support their heart desires. Since coaches donate a percentage of their fees to practice, getting a coach assists us to support ourselves while supporting practice. To request a Zen Awareness Coach, visit sanghamarket.com, go to the services section, click on the little monk, and then follow the directions. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry.
Oh, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Ellie in San Diego.
Well, hello, Ellie. How are you?
Hi, Sherry. I'm doing great, actually. I'm having a good afternoon. Some butterflies with getting on the call, though.
Aha. Uh-huh. That happens, doesn't it?
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, tell us about life.
I've really been riding the wave since the retreat and doing a lot of recording and listening, and it's just been a booster shot for my practice.
Oh, good.
Which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's funny, isn't it? We get a booster shot, and then just slowly over time, it kind of fades a little bit every day, every day, every day, every day, so gradual, we don't really notice it. And then when either we realize, whoa, I'm kind of far away from practice, or we come for another booster shot and we realize that I had gotten a little far away from practice, and then we're on track again, which is a great argument for doing practice consistently, isn't it?
Yeah. And I actually was seeing something about that today, about how conditioning tries to convince me that I'm not disciplined, and that what dropped in was that it's doing that because something has come up from life that shows me how I am disciplined.
Yes. Yes. I can't remember if we were talking about that on the retreat or if we've been talking about it here since we got back, but that notion that life kind of drops in awareness and we're not there for it, and conditioning reacts to the awareness, and by the time we tune in, we're listening to conditioning, and we have no idea that what it's doing is reacting to what happened, what was dropped in by life. So you're definitely making that connection, that it's reacting. It's not telling you the truth. It's reacting in the opposite to what's actually happening.
Yeah, and I'd heard you say that, and I was kind of, but I hadn't had the experience so directly, and so that was neat.
Yes, yes, it's great. You know what I love about that? This is one of the things I love best about awareness practice. So we're going along in life. We're all pretty much exactly the same, right? Awareness, humanity, it all works pretty much the same for all of us. And so these things are happening all the time, but we don't know they're happening until we hear them referred to. And then we recognize something for what it is that we had never recognized as distinct from anything else that's going on. So that's been happening for you probably, you know, since you were a little tiny kid, right? But
yeah.
You don't notice it because it doesn't stand out. And then somebody points it out and you go, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I can see how that's happening. I just love
yeah,
that.
And what it really connects to for me is kind of updating my kind of idea of who this person, this being Ellie is, because I have a lot of outdated things that conditioning has given me, and so that's part of what I see happening. Although I keep transforming at such a rate that it's kind of difficult to keep up with, but you know, it's good to not believe the old self definitions.
Oh, it's so important, isn't it? Which again is a commercial for recording and listening, because
mm-hmm.
with recording and listening, we really are getting and staying current. Conditioned mind, it just wants to be, you know, last week, last year, 10 years ago, whatever. You know, it's just drawing from this huge, this vast repertoire of stuff that has nothing to do with anything. But with recording and listening, we can get right here and talk about what's going on now, the insights and awarenesses that are coming up, and even the conditioning that's coming up in the sense of, wow, I find myself thinking about when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I need to, you know, I don't want to be doing that. I want to get here because my life here is, and then now we're back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a kind of realization that dropped in after I left the retreat is that, or, well, at some point, was that I've been pursuing an experience that had happened now, gosh, 8 years ago, when I had this experience of going on a different kind of retreat, but I kind of went into it very wholeheartedly, not really experiencing all the resistance that came up as it came up, and had this just amazing thing where all of a sudden my mind was blank and there were no voices for like a week afterward, because I had so completely, like, I don't know, I think conditioning was just like, what in the world just happened? And it took it a while to rebuild the framework to hold in the being. And
yeah.
But what happened after that was part of the framework was that is the state that I need to pursue.
Instead of
being present. And the other thing that dropped in is that I didn't have the amount of practice at that time. Like, I had no clue what was going on. I had no idea how it had happened. It was just like completely and utterly baffling to that person. And to know now that, I mean, I have experiences of moments of just being here, and it's similar, but it's so different because of the wealth of practice that I have under me now. And so I just wanted to share that.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad to hear you have that attitude toward it, because I don't know if we've talked about this, but for anybody else we haven't talked about it, people's lives can be ruined over that kind of thing. Because what happens to them is... all the lights come on, or as you say, all the voices fall away. Everything is just blank and open and spacious. And then you come back to life as it is for most of us, and the comparison is hideous. So people don't want to live in a regular consciousness any longer, which is fine. I mean, we can certainly practice and aspire to being more present and more conscious, but letting conditioned mind take that over and use it to make us miserable, that we just don't want to go in that direction. Because then the gift that was is something that gets turned and used against you, which is really tragic. Yeah.
And I totally
thank you for those.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you, like, that for the realization of how that was being used against me. So I'm just super grateful.
Yeah. 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 Cause it's a beautiful thing. And we want to say, you know, it's kind of like all, any of the really beautiful experiences that we can have as a human being. You know, people will fall in love, and then when they can't maintain that feeling, when they aren't having that same experience, they think they want to get rid of that person and get another person so they can have that feeling again. And people do that with every aspect of life. You know, I love my job, and now I'm not high all the time at my job, and so I don't want to do that any longer. I want to go. And we're just pursuing a feeling that is a gift. It's a joy. It's a blessing when we have it, but it's not something that we want to aspire to in a way that it becomes a torture when we're not there and we're not having it. Yeah.
Totally.
That's good. Yeah. Oh. All right. Well, thank you, my dear.
Thank you very much. Thank you,
take
Michael. Thank you, Sherry. Yes, I will.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Ellie. And we have more callers here, Sherry.
Good.
Oh. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Mary Jane in Palo Alto.
Well, hello, Mary Jane.
Hi.
Haven't heard from you in a while either. What's going on?
Well, maybe you answered my question just at the end of that last call just now, but... I mean, I don't know if it's quite the situation, but in my marriage or my primary relationship, I've definitely been in a challenging place of lately, and maybe just because of the strain of having a child and the strain that puts on our interaction, but I find, there's certain ways of interacting, or I don't know if I need more now, or I'm just having trouble tolerating certain ways we relate to each other, and so I get really frustrated, and then we work on things a little bit, and but there's just this level of pain going on right now, and I don't quite know.
Usually I would do this, Mary Jane, but can you give me an example? Something that's not too, personal that you don't want to talk about, but.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's, the everyday thing could be that, the little things, like when someone gets home from work and they immediately, he might say, we need to fix these three things in the house. And it's like going into, we haven't really connected or anything. And it kind of becomes like a business relationship or something. So maybe that's one example. And the other is, just this, I don't know if there's some kind of deeper level. Like, I find I'm just not talking to him in the way. I find he's more introverted than I am, and so it's more, I don't think he thinks to ask me questions. And I'm kind of, if someone isn't, that interested, I'm not going to share that much. So I'm just finding I'm not sharing that much. And in a way, it's good for, being quiet. I mean, we can be quiet together a lot, but maybe I miss that, or I have it more with friendships, but not in our relationship as much.
And Mary Jane, has that changed over time?
Yes. Probably. I think he was more able to have deeper conversations, I think, before we maybe lived together, or it's definitely been a challenge. For a while, it's kind of how someone's a little different when they're out in public, and so I think I maybe was more around his public side before, and then privately maybe he was feeling low or, just taking care of himself, and so it was kind of getting, so it's probably been a long-standing challenge, and it's probably just intensified because I'm not as engaged in my life right now, and so I'm noticing that more.
Well, that's what you kind of started out with, that it's perhaps that you need more from the relationship now, and maybe the relationship is kind of the way it always was, but you had a different life, right, before the baby, and the two of you had a different life before the baby. And now with these changes, you would like more of your needs possibly to be met in the relationship, right? Because I'm projecting all this. You can stop me and say you're completely off base. But, you're not free to come and go the way you were in the past. And so more of your needs would reasonably be met at home than so much out and about and that sort of thing. Are you still there?
Sherry, I'm not seeing her here in this moment.
Oh, I was afraid my projections were so wild that I had overwhelmed her completely.
Let me try again. Okay, hold on one second, Sherry.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Now she's back.
Oh, good. There you are. Okay.
I don't know where you lost me, but...
Well, I was talking. That's...
okay,
and then
I didn't hear
you. Okay. Well, what I was projecting was, because going back to the... maybe your needs are greater at this point, that having the child now, you're home more, I would imagine. Your life is more constrained. And so more of your needs, reasonably, would be met at home through the relationship with your husband rather than oh, there she is, rather than out and about with friends and doing the other things that you might have been able to do more of before. So the relationship might not be that different, but where you are with the relationship has changed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, I think just the demands, you know, we probably haven't. It just takes a lot of our energy. Like, you know, we're more of our stress selves a bit in general.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
There's extra juice to, you know, to kind of be in that magnanimous place that helps you get through differences and.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right, you're operating at a kind of at a deficit. So it's harder for anybody to be their best self, and hard to be generous when you feel yourself in a place of deprivation.
Yeah, and I think it's really been hard now, and this is probably where the story is. After we had this really great window of time that wasn't that long ago, I thought. It was so relaxing. You know, that's when you were talking about sometimes we go for the feeling, but it was so relaxing to me. And it's hard for me to just feel that relaxed without things being better than they are. And it's hard when it's the person you're around the most, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it is. And so this brings us back to awareness practice, right? Which we knew it was going to come to sooner or later because... what we know, even though we don't want to accept this oftentimes, is that the only experience we have in life is our own.
I know.
Yeah, you knew I was going to say that, didn't you? And so, you know, sometimes that can feel even really unfair because it's like, okay, fine. So I have to be the person I want to be, but why doesn't he have to be the person that he should want to be and that I want him to be? Right? So I have to do all the work here. This is wrong. And yet, it is the only thing that you can do. It's the only thing that you have any influence over.
Well, yeah, that's it. Because it can get frustrating if you're trying to get the other person to change, you know. And usually in relationships, I don't really do that. But I think in your primary relationship, it's sometimes harder not to do that. So.
Oh, it's very hard. It's very hard. And part of it is the familiarity, right? I mean, what started out as a romantic relationship turns into a family relationship.
Yeah.
And that can be deadly if we're not really keeping our eyes open. Because we start out and we want to be our best selves for the other person. And then we want to be ourselves, you know, because we're tired of being our best self all the time. Now I just want to be myself, and then it can quickly slide into, and I really don't need to make any effort because I'm so used to you and you're so used to me, and what difference does it make anyway? And I think it's a really important place in our lives to bring more attention because karmic conditioning would work so hard to have us bring less attention. So it's that be what you want the world to be, with the idea in mind or the experience in mind that when you are the way you want him to be, you get to have that experience for yourself, and it also creates an opening for him to have a different experience that might assist him in opening up in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to build the bridge, in other words, for the two of you to be able to get back to each other because you're the one who's identified it as an issue.
Okay, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. And the way to do that, I mean,
be the way you
want him to be.
Mm-hmm. And it's not even so much treating him the way you want him to treat you.
Yeah, it's treating myself.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Just being that way.
Yeah.
Being what you need.
Yeah.
She's in agreement. Sounds like she's going,
She's saying phone. Oh, no. She called phone. So she's putting her hand on her ear and saying,
I see. She's making a call.
It's that contrast when you have this, I don't know if conditioning really uses that against us, like this little being full of pure joy and bubbliness. You know, and so in the midst of, this is like the greatest time of my life on some level. I mean, it's so present. I'm so present every day. And, you know, maybe that's why conditioning has amped up this, you know, this pain just seems to have intensified in the...
So. And, you know, this is just another piece of it to look at. I think you and the little girl are together most of the time. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And husband, dad is off doing other things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that can be a point of compassion.
Mm.
You know, that while you have the opportunity to be with that little bubbling bit of joy, he doesn't. And so maybe to just kind of keep that in conscious awareness somewhere, that the world that he's coming from when he comes back to you two is very different from the world that you two have been inhabiting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of a
point of sympathy, you know, or understanding or compassion that might not be there otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. And maybe in a month I'll see if I can get back on and check in again.
Good. Do that, please. Let us know how it's going.
Okay. Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. All right, you two. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Mary Jane. And I think we have time for one more caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry, it's Jen in Rhinebeck, New York.
Well, hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. You know, I've been thinking about you a lot.
Oh.
And I'll tell you why. Because you told me about something that I followed up on. I haven't told you that I followed up on it, but I did. I have my Insight Timer. Is that what it's called?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
The Insight Timer. And I wanted it to be mentioned on Open Air, as a matter of fact, in case anybody else wanted to get it. Fabulous app. You said, we have one more thing to count now. We can count our steps, and we can count our meditations.
That's right.
And, yeah, it's so much fun. I got a little, it said, you have a message. And I thought, who do I have a message from? And so I checked, and it said, you've reached a milestone. It told me how many days in a row I had been meditating.
Yes, it's very fun. I love it, too.
It's very fun, yeah.
Yeah, there's this extra sense of achievement, and watching the hours accumulate is pretty cool because I never really would have a concept that it's like, wow, I've meditated 30 hours worth, you know, in the last couple months. I didn't just ever saw it from that perspective before, so it's really fun.
Yeah, yeah, it's fun, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not what you called about tonight, so what did you call about tonight?
Oh, well, let's see. There's so many possibilities to talk about.
Mm.
But I guess I'll talk about the email and the money questions. Because that's certainly up for me. I'm, you know, looking at tax time of the year and realizing that in 2014 I made about 50% less than in 2013. So I've been teetering on the edge of sheer panic.
Oh, dear.
Watching that, but there's, you know, I'm just watching how it's, there's actually nothing to panic about, but it's just seeing numbers on the paper just means so much. The conditioning is finding it so much meaning, and I've got to panic. I'm going backwards. I'm not supposed to be going backwards. Like all these beliefs just coming up around that. When really, life is just fine. I'm taking care of myself just fine, and you know things are fine.
Yeah. but this is an opportunity to panic and
absolutely.
And to especially about the future, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So you may be all right now, mm-hmm. but what does this mean for the future?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Which is great because we don't know.
Because we never know. Because we can't know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And completely discounting the fact that I made choices knowing that this was likely going to happen. You know, like I went into this with my eyes open, leaving a job and going freelance and et cetera, et cetera. So, like, it's not actually a surprise, but suddenly it seems like, you know, conditioning's like, whoa, you didn't tell me it was going to be this bad, you know.
Yeah. As if it cares.
Right, exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. So the cool thing about it is that I feel like, you know, this much in the way I suppose the Insight Timer app works, like practice accumulates. So mm-hmm. rather than panicking, I feel like I'm seeing the fruits of my practice in that I see that the panic is there if I choose to panic.
Yes.
And it's kind of like over there, you know?
Yes.
And I see it. It's right. The opportunity is being handed to me to go down that road if I choose to fall in that hole again. And for the most part, I'm not choosing that. And if
I love that image. I love that image. It's right over there.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you turn your attention to it, mm-hmm. it'll be there. And that's the life experience you'll have.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if you don't, then maybe it's over there, maybe it isn't over there. We actually don't know.
Yeah.
But you're not having that experience when you're not giving your attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
So important.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and when I give my attention to it, one of the things I noticed in the exercise from the email was that I've got these standards around money. You know, these judgments and projections, like you shouldn't have so many Rolls Royces or whatever. But those they're not fixed. So the rules can change at any time. You know, like for so and so, it's okay because they give back so much of their money. So if they have a Rolls Royce, it's not such a big deal because they have a foundation too. And you know, like there's just so many exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen this other places in my life where the standard is high, but it is not clear what it is. So, of course, I'll never meet it. Because even if I think I meet it, it's actually changed, you know, because it's not.
Now that brings up something that's of interest to me. And so maybe we can look at it for a second. So-and-so can have all of it. Somebody was just saying this the other night. That they have friends who are multimillionaires, and it's okay because they have good reasons for it, and they do lots of good stuff with it. That same thing. I know these people. They're nice people. I love them, and so it's okay that they're really rich. But there seems to be an assumption with that if you were really rich, you wouldn't do such good things with your money.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of it? Because so why shouldn't you have a Rolls Royce and a ton of money and a foundation and give lots back? And can we not trust you to do that?
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure. I hadn't thought about it that way. But there's definitely my own personal glass ceiling here.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not quite sure why it's, you know, what... I guess it could probably be that, what you just suggested, and I imagine it, again, because it's not a fixed belief, I suppose, like, it could be anything, like, you know, it could just, every time I come up to that, you know, approach that possibility, whatever karmic story is up in the moment, conditioning could toss my way as the reason why I can't have money like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it'll be interesting to explore, won't it? It's like Laura started us off with the, you know, the boss says, yeah, you can have a raise, and then, okay, what do you ask for?
Right.
What's okay to ask for? So how much money would it be okay for you to have? What can you be trusted with? At what point do we have to really rein you in? Because and why would we need to do that? What would it mean if you had a lot of money?
There's something that's not good about being excessive. There's a lot of judgment around excess, which is ironic since compulsive eating is another big karmic problem. Yeah, so this conditioning will sort of goad me into excessive consumption on that level, but over here with the money, it's not allowed.
Yeah. And isn't that interesting? Because if we were going to vote for one or the other, I know which one I think we would pick. You?
I think I'm with you.
Yeah, less food, more money. Thanks, awfully.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Because with that money, I can buy better food.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, there are all of those, again, this is why I'm hoping we're going to take this year to explore it, because what is behind all this stuff? You know, and there's, with so much of karmic conditioning, we are made to assume that we know what's going on, and we don't.
Yeah.
We really don't. We start breaking these things down, and why exactly is that? And we can't get to an answer. Because there isn't one.
Yeah. Yeah, when I was doing the exercise, I feel like I encountered what I encountered a couple of years ago when I needed to buy a new car, which was just this whole, like, all this judgment around where do I fit socioeconomically? Like, what kind of car is allowable? What is too much? What is, like, you know, not a little too low, you know? Like, you know, and what it means about me to have a car of a certain kind. Could it be new? I've never had a new car. I've got this belief that it's not right to buy a new car. Used cars are fine, but not, like, it was just, the layers are amazing. Like how.
Yeah, and when we start laying it out like that, it's like, where did this come from?
Yes.
Who decided that? I didn't decide that. And yet I'm living my life as if these were my decisions.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And as if they're sort of rules. Like, these are the guidelines that not only me, but everybody should be following, you know?
Everybody. So unless, of course, they have a lot of money, but they do a lot of good with it.
Good with it.
Or unless they have some life circumstances that require them to do something different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we don't look at the exceptions for ourselves.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yes, and the exceptions are part of that that strategy of conditionings to keep the expectations unclear. You know,
Ever the moving target.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You cannot pin it down. Cannot, because when you do, we get to what I hope we're going to get to, which is, this is nonsense. There is nothing whatsoever to any of this.
Yeah.
And then we all have to go out and buy a Rolls Royce and try to figure out how to pay for it.
Okay.
All right. Well, keep in touch, would you?
I will. I'm looking forward to the next.
And keep racking up those meditations.
Oh, it's fun. Yep.
It is so fun. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
All right. Take care. Good night.
You too, Sherry. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jen. And Sherry, before we sign off here, I have one announcement.
Oh, what is that?
Monk Jen will be leading a workshop in New York City on Saturday, January 31st, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Really? Yeah. Our very own little Jen is going to be in New York City when?
Saturday, January 31st.
Wow. Very All right. Exciting. Well, people need to get there, huh? Because I heard the last time she was there, it was a stunner. So I'm sure she's going to top that this time.
Yeah, no pressure.
No pressure. All right. Yeah. Thank you for that, Michael. Yeah. Talk to you next week.
Thank you for a great show. Yes.
Oh, thank you. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you then.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.